Hey,
you're listening to Avid Research.
Avid Research.
Avid Research.
An Australian STEM podcast.
Where we answer the questions you never quite got around to asking.
Welcome back to the show, team. My name is Amelia, and today we have a doubly awesome guest on the show. We have Dr. Chantel, who is a vet, and you met Dr. Chantel from all the way back in 2020, I'm pretty sure, was our first interview. It's been a good gap of 2 years. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Amelia. It's really nice to come and feel so welcome. So thank you.
Wonderful. That's a really good start. Hopefully feeling welcome is related to feeling comfortable and chatty. So start with a first question of, like, other than vet, what is your job?
So other than I now work for myself. So I run a vet business, and that involves not only doing the thing, but running a small business and, you know, managing clients and managing business software, as well as my practice all to speak to each other, then getting that to speak to my suppliers because now I'm in charge of all the ordering of the things that I need and things like that, speaking to the medication companies directly now, dealing with reps. It's a highly varied job, and no 2 days are the same, that's for sure. I certainly get to over my desk scheduling, which is really helpful for my chronic illness. So I can take things at my own pace, and that I'm not letting anybody down. And I'm also able to, attract my services out temporarily to other organizations. So at the moment I am FIFO every fortnight to Adelaide, to an amazing vet business called Poorly Understood, shout out to the behavior team in Adelaide, who do wonderful things with having trainers in consults with the veterinarian. They're a further established than where I'm at. And so it's nice to dream and say, oh, this is where I would like to, you know, this is where I'd like to aim going. And yeah, they do things a bit differently. And I think that the clients see a lot of value in it and feel very fulfilled after a consultation. So it's certainly something that is food for thought.
There was a huge amount in there that we need to unpack. So you've started your own veterinary business, which is very cool. Yeah. Is it your standard, I don't know, vet where you just go for your annual vaccinations, or are you like a specialist vet?
So I am not a specialist. I haven't done an extra 5 to 6 years of intense residency under a specialist doing 300 plus case reports, etc. Again, shout out to the specialists. They have done amazing work to get where they are. I'm a humble GP who has a mission with behavior, and I don't have a physical clinic. I work from home. I don't invite clients into my home. I drive to people's homes. So I'm a mobile vet. But because it's mostly behavioral, it's, you know, very consulting heavy. And so that's sort of my schedule, is mostly around the behavior appointments, which are a minimum an hour long. Most of them are 2 hours. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So your mobile is kind of cool and like a nice way. It sounds like a nice business lifestyle, really.
It's flexible.
Yeah, very flexible.
It's got its pros and its cons. Yeah.
You have to take a thermos. You don't have like a little kitchenette, but
I think the most challenging thing is finding somewhere to pee when you're out on the road.
Yeah. Yes. That's a skill.
It's the little things.
they can become really big. When you're talking about behavior, like what sort of pet behaviors do people ask for help with?
Yeah, so usually it's problematic behaviors, right? It's behaviors that often negatively impact the owner, and so I have a problem with my pet doing XYZ, and that's usually raised to their GP as a first port of call. And then the GP says, I didn't get a lot of behavior at uni. Well, they don't actually say that, but it's true. Let me refer you to someone who actually knows more about behavior. And most vets are very keen to, you know, get the behavior and pass that on. And so it, depending on the severity of the condition, you know, whether the condition's pathological or whether it's more environmental or managed. What I mean by if the condition is pathological is meaning, does it come from a illness? So is there an ill state of mind? When I say environmental or management, does it mean that actually normal? It's perfectly normal to do this behavior. It's just problematic for the owner. And so how can we manage this normal behavior to either discourage it or redirect it or, you know, the rest? And so, yeah, depending on the severity and the probability of either of those scenarios, a GP will hopefully triage to the best of their ability the behavior case to go to either a GP like me with further interest in behavior, to somebody who has done their memberships in behavior, which is like a mid-level, it's like a step between being a regular GP and a specialist, so the Australian College of Veterinary Scientists. And then there's the specialists who are the top tier of knowledge about behavior in, about animal behavior in Australia. And there's only four or five of them. I am studying, there's only, so Kirsty, Gabrielle, Jackie.
We'll listen by name. There's that few.
Look, I'm a bit of a creep. I like to fangirl over my behaviour specialists. There's only four in Australia. There are some residents currently studying under these specialists in order to become specialists themselves. I'm not one of them. I'm studying for my mid level tier, the membership level of behaviour at the moment. Yeah.
And something that happened before we started recording is that Shani's dog was about to start yapping and telling the dog off incessantly or something. Shani went and got a lick mat and now presumably the dog is happily licking the mat, which seems like, you know, you live in the thing. You live in what you do. That's important.
Oh, thanks.
That's great.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. No, it's more just once you know, you can't unknow things. And the, you know, the yapping or the barking behavior was Lulu trying to tell me that she wanted to interact, that she wanted to, that she was ready to, you know, be a pet. And we didn't necessarily want that to happen. So I gave her something else to do. I redirected her behavior, and licking is a self-soothing behavior. So it tends to calm and lower heart rate. So yeah, two birds, one stone.
Are there any patterns of like behavioral issues that you are starting to see?
There's a lot. There's so much focus on pet owners being in lockdown and then not being in lockdown and disruptive for the pets and causing separation distress or separation anxiety. That's not untrue. You know, there's definitely, it is disruptive for the pets to get used to having their owners around all the time. Initially, that in itself was disruptive. For the pets to be used to the owners coming and going. And then the pets often get as much rest as they used to. So that was problematic. So often we were starting to try and tell people, well, no, no, you can't walk your dog five times a day, even though that's your excuse. you need to let them rest sometimes. So that was a shift in itself. And then, yes, there's the going back into the community and back to the rest. Yes, separation distress is sort of one thing that we're starting to see, but I think the intensity of it is something that's been commented on by the specialists themselves. They've said, you know, anecdotally, the cases are getting worse, that they're getting harder to treat. And we don't have any data or studies that I know of at the moment to say as to why that is happening. But my guess is that we breed companion animals for companion traits, which is interaction, affiliative behaviours, you know, wanting to interact with us, et cetera, can at a more intense level be anxiety. So the need to seek information perpetually from the owner, the need to interact constantly, the need to be touching their owner, the need to be in the same room as their owner, and all of this. And I think potentially we've been breeding it into our pets as like, well, we want them to need us when we want them to, when we want to have an interaction with them. We want them to be ready to have an interaction with us, but you can't switch it on and off. And so unfortunately that same intensity is then present when you're not there and when you're not ready for interaction. And I think we all just, yeah, need to remember that there's sent, you know, beings behind the fluff and that, you know, they have good days, bad days, have emotions. They can experience frustration. They can experience hurt. They can experience joy, you know, all of those range of emotions. And yeah, I think there's a lot of education being spread and to circulate, thankfully, about respect and boundaries and consent. So what I mean by that is, you know, we need to check in with our pets. You know, for example, when is it okay if I touch you? You know, that kind of, I'd go up to another human, which is another primate, and just start touching them generally, unless you're very, very close.
Mostly.
To them, but, you know, mostly. You know, to say, you know, we're not intimate partners with our pets, so we're more housemates with our pets. So you wouldn't go up to a housemate and just start, you know, touching them, stroking them, you know, and, you know, not definitely not all the rest. So checking in and, you know, that's, and then moving your hand away. And if they nudge you for more, or if they lean in for more, then great. You know, that's consent to keep going. So little consent checks, that goes a long way to build more trust in and a deeper relationship with your pet. Yeah, it's pretty incredible the amount of things that pets will say yes when you give them the opportunity to say no, especially in a veterinary sense as well, like when we're doing, you know, blood tests and things like that. And it's something that zookeepers have been using for years and years and years. You know, they've been administering veterinary care to these big, dangerous animals. And these big dangerous animals have been voluntarily putting their arms through cages, knowing that they're going to get a little sharp sting from a needle for a blood test, but they put it through anyway because they know that they're going to get a reward in the end. And that's the power of positive reinforcement. But it's also the power of consent and cooperative care. Yeah. So that's essentially, you know, the core of my business, the core of and the ethos of the vet care that and the education that I focus on. So I still do behaviour consults for pet owners on a range of different problems and issues. I do consult about cats particularly because I feel like they're mostly misunderstood. But I also like to educate vet teams on how to work with their patients instead of battling their patients. And it's something that I take great pride in, and I see it as a big privilege.
Oh, and it could make a huge difference for a lot of pets out there.
Absolutely. Yeah. There are plenty of pets out there that are simply not getting the care that they deserve because, you know, they're too frightened and they lash out at the vet clinic and they can't be touched.
Mm. It sort of sounds like whilst, yes, obviously there's pathological issues and there's genuine anxiety that's, you know, in pets' brains and things, but it sounds like there is also a huge amount of potential in improving these relationships just by teaching humans.
Yeah. There's this awesome book called The Other End of the Leash, and it's written by Dr. Patricia McConnell, who's done a PhD, and the whole book is written sort of from the perspective that humans are just another species of animal. You know, we're not in any way superior to pets, but we're also, at the end of the day, we're primates. We have innate ways of communicating. We have biologically ingrained ways of, you know, it's slightly off camera, but I'm using my hands a lot to gesticulate because I'm talking about something that I'm very passionate about and I'm, you know, very animated at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't see dogs and cats waving their arms about when they're starting to get quiet work like that. We are very different, and it actually takes effort to understand the other end of the leash. So, yeah, Dr. Pat McConnell and The Other End of the Leash, the book, is amazing. And so, you know, she talks about how, you know, we're very, very grabby species. And that's humans are a very grabby species, and that's just not what dogs are about. You know, when they greet, they tend to kind of pass each other and stand, and they don't look each other directly in the eye, and they don't give each other a hug. They just kind of stand close, not just like maybe touching, maybe not, and they do a lot of sniffing. Yeah, they kind of stand nose to tail, like a Pisces symbol type thing. And they get their information, and you know, if things are good, then, you know, the conversation will continue, maybe in the form of some play or, you know, some co-sniffing. We'll go on a sniffari together. Come sniff this sniff over here. I thought that it was really interesting. But then, yeah, and, you know, and if they don't like what they, then, you know, some aggressive behaviours, you know, distance increasing behaviours can ensue, but it's a very different species, you know. And I think people assume or take for granted what they think they know about dogs and cats, and when it really comes down to it, you actually have to sort of be told. And then learn, you have to actually learn the differences between humans and dogs and cats, and why some of our behaviours are actually not great for them. You know, as much as some of their behaviours annoy us, some of our behaviours certainly annoy them. And it's certainly, you know, weird. So, yeah.
And we do seem to love projecting onto particularly our pets. And
like, absolutely.
We project ourselves and like, oh, look, it's so much like
oh man, I am so guilty of this. Anthropomorphization, it can be a way that we end, you know, relationship with our pet, but it can also be a bit of a barrier to us really understanding what our pet is and for us to give them the support or the care that they need in that moment. You know, that a dog chases its tail, for example, might think that that's funny and entertaining. Oh, nail again. But actually that's behavior generally. It's a form of OCD and that dog is suffering mentally. It can't control chasing its tail. It's not happy when it does it. So, yeah. Oh, there she goes. She's finished her licky mat. Good job, Lily. Good job.
It's time to join in. Would you like to process of deciding to actually start a business? Like going from having taking the big leap? What was that process like and how did you decide this was the time?
Really have access to a pharmacy. So mm-hmm. I was able to then also with my own insurance, with access to my with access to the wholesaler and with my own insurance and ABN, I was then able to do the odd consultances or family.
Mm-hmm.
And I could still sort of keep in touch or keep my hand in doing clinical veterinary work while I was, doing desk work, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
That small part of that setup was already present, prior to me leaving clinical space for a time. And then, I tried out industry for corporate world and there was a launch of a behavioral product that I was involved in. And I got to spend a lot of time with Dr. Jackie and Dr. Trofina, the specialists.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, Shani fangirling all day. Oh, my goodness. And it made me feel like I was really missing out, that just wasn't really being business seriously. I it was just very little step by little step when the time came to take my business seriously. It was just little step by little step. So, getting a graphic designer to make the logo and, starting to hand out business cards, having a business number, little step by little step, I was starting to book appointments, starting back out there, that I was back on the clinical scene because I'd lost all my contacts. I'd lost all my contacts. They'd all learned that I'd gone into industry and I was no longer in clinical practice. So it's now a matter of letting people know on the scene. and you can refer to me again. There was lots of paperwork as well.
I bet.
Lots of paperwork to the council to let them know that I was operating out of my house. To wholesalers, I had to do a bit of DIY to make sure that my house was fit to carry some stock. Certain schedule of drugs. And make some space for a little bit of product and things that I might regularly need in the house and sort of start figuring out how do I run my business. I had to invest in practice management software. I shout out to any vet who is able to just organize themselves with documents for their patient records. My neurodivergent brain needs so much more than that. So I had to invest in practice management software, which was not cheap, and learn how to use that because it was one that I was not familiar with that had lots of integrations. So it was the clear winner for what I needed. And then, process of clients booking, what's the process of, them reaching out, what's the process of, taking deposits or, you know, whatever the case may be. How do you set up your billing? How do you charge for your time? You know, and all of that things like it, and it's still something I haven't been active in my business now for a year just yet. And I'm still figuring all of that out. And I'm sure that I'll still be figuring it out for even a number of years to come, especially as I hopefully obtain qualifications and things like that.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's just and something that, you know, is continually being updated. And, of course, any time that I want to order in anything new, then I have to put that into the practice management software, figure out how it's going to be prescribed, make sure that it's got the right settings so it can be prescribed. And
So
figure out all the adding. It's a relatively complicated process to add a product into the practice management software, but, you know, it's got to be done. So, yeah, these are all things that take up time. And something that I'm trying to balance is there's always something that needs to be done for the business. Like, it never ends. And I want to do my studies, but I also want to run a successful business. And I really feel my priorities being strained. And I don't know how parents do it. Either parents running businesses, I don't know how you do it, or parents studying, I don't know how you do it. And parents and study, like, whoa, that is next level.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very lucky that my husband and I are childless by choice, and we have just the two cats and the dog to worry about. So, you know, it's certainly been an adjustment, and I've been very, very lucky to have such a supportive husband. Dougie has worked out the accounting software that is Xero, and loves to make all of my books balance, which is something that my brain, when I open up the dashboard and then go to try and like do some reconciliations, I'll do this. I have a bachelor's degree in veterinary medicine, but this is what defeats me. Matching the spend on this with the spend on that. I can't do it. No. But anyway.
Yeah. We've all got our own skills, and it does take a team, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. But also, like, Dougie's just encouraging, and, you know, he was the one who made the big push to do my own. We're not scratching, thank you. Dougie's my biggest supporter. He was the one that finally, you know, get the business together. And, you know, he also was the one to accept that we would no longer get a second salary in the household, and that, you know, we would have to sacrifice having a second salary, but also then we would have to sacrifice a second salary, but then also we were going to be out of pocket for a little while. Do I have to get another licky mat for you?
Two licky mats in one night.
Oh, man. She went through five one time.
Oh, my gosh.
I just put half a pouch of food per licky mat. So, you know, it's not all bad, but we'll see. She doesn't have very good impulse control, does our little Lulu.
Is there any advice that you would give to, like, yourself almost a year ago? Is there any advice in setting this up that you wish you could go back in time and give yourself?
No, actually. I think that everything's been a bit of a slow burn, as in, you know, I've tackled one facet of the business at a time, And I think that it's just worked out really well for me. You know, sometimes it feels overwhelming, of course, but if I had have known all the things that needed to be done, list in front of me at the very start, that would have been so overwhelming. I probably would have just been like, nah, I don't know if I can do all of that. So just actually diving in, pops up when it pops up type thing. And, you know, it's just me. I don't have any employees yet. So that is one level of complication that we're yet to tackle, and we'll get there when the challenge comes. I think it's all been drip fed, all these little challenges, and we've just tackled them one at a time. And it's just each time we, you know, overcome a challenge, it just, you know, gives us a little boost. And then when you do, on the last 8 months or so, you just, a year ago, if you told me achieved this, I wouldn't believe you. You know, properly start my own business, run calls, you know, drop into clinics, perform presentations at half of new branding companies, speaking about introducing their product in a fear-free way. You know, I've been booked for speaking opportunities at veterinary conference at the end of the year. Thanks to the business and you know, getting my name back as someone who's just super passionate in what I do. Yeah.
Do you have like dreams and hopes for the business?
Definitely. I don't want to give it all away though. No. I definitely want to business into a bricks and mortar facility. I want for people to be able to bring their pets to a fear-free clinic for simple things, for the vaccinations, for the ICs, for the everyday stuff that their pet deserve to be treated for, as well as the complex stuff, as well as the behavior, as well as all of that. And it takes a little bit of designing for a clinic to be fear-free. There's a fair bit to be said for the actual interior design and how the clinic is laid out. That can go a long way to ensuring that, you know, that there's a divider in the area, so that if there is a reactive, it can be behind the divider and not know that there's other dogs in the way. Keeping dog and cat waiting areas so that the cats don't have to be stressed out so much by the dogs. Having cat consulting rooms, cat hospital, and all the rest. Yeah. There's a design to do. That's definitely, I've had some people inquire, if I'm nice. So hopefully, too short staffed when I open.
That's such a fantastic dream. Very exciting.
Yeah, I think so. Especially operating in the fear-free space in the veterinary clinic is something that I've been passionate about now for over a decade. And now that I'm actually able to work with that, for that, and advocate for that, you know, almost as what I do for a job now, instead of what I do in my spare time, or, you know, instead of being the champion of the clinic for this and being, you know, on a lonely post community, you know, I'm converting people to the cult, whatever.
I don't think the cats would call it that. So cool. Are there any like real standout myths? Like obviously chasing the tail is a great myth to bust, but are there any other myths you'd like to take this opportunity to bust?
Ooh, where do I begin? Dominance. Oh my goodness. People talk about dogs being dominant or being the alpha, you know, they are descendants of wolves and all this type of thing. And oh my goodness, no. Like dogs are so, so far removed from that. Like, could you, like, hang on. Give me a moment. Lily, come here.
You're not, listeners. Sorry.
Come here. Could you imagine this thing in the wild fending for itself?
Little white fluff ball.
I mean, really? Oh, you're gross, Lulu.
Oh, she could take down that.
She maybe couldn't take down a fly. She tried the other day and failed.
Okay. Very affectionate, Papo.
Yeah, she needs a dental. Anyway, so our French bulldogs, our chihuahuas, our cavaliers, our oodle crosses are so far removed from their ancestors that, you know, we can't treat them as such, and we've been breeding personality traits into them for over 10,000 years. So, you know, we need to treat them the way that they are expressing themselves now, in the here and now. And that, you know, comes down to essentially treating them like 2-year-olds, really, because they don't have a sense of right and wrong. They don't know. If you tell them off, they don't know why you are grumpy with them. They can't put 2 and 2 together, especially if it's time after the fact of what they've done. Mm. They definitely won't put 2 and 2 together then. But they do respond to what feels good. And they know what feels good, and they'll be more inclined to do what feels good again and again if we can make it feel good. And a really great way of making any species feel good is food, because food releases endorphins. If it didn't, they shouldn't eat and we'd starve. So using as a reinforcer is really powerful. And so yeah, they don't experience guilt, they don't experience jealousy as such. They're just a little bit more basic, but still, you know, still who they are. Yeah. So yeah, dominance and alpha, and you know, the dog's doing it to spite me, or you know, the cat, you know, things like that.
Oh yes, okay.
Yeah, yeah. No. No, no. they're not humans.
At the same time, treating them like they're really dumb and really smart simultaneously.
Exactly.
Yep.
I think it's just recognizing their limitations, but then meeting them. Like taking them to the type thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Love them for who they are, not who you're projecting them to be.
Absolutely. Yep. Thank you. That's I think I might use that in my next consult now. That was a good one.
Yeah, that'd be interesting how people take that one. That's all. That's fantastic. We should probably start wrapping up. So have you got, we've already shouted out to a bunch of people, but have you got any other shout-outs that you would like to do? People who deserve virtual high fives.
Yeah, well, I've Dr. Jackie and Dr. Trofina, 2 out of 4 behaviour specialists, veterinary behaviour specialists in Australia. I can't leave out Dr. Gabrielle and Dr. Kirsty. So that's out our 4 veterinary behaviour psychiatrists in Australia. And You know, they do wonderful work, and I think that they've created some fantastic community because very willing to help educate vets that are just trying to better their knowledge area, and they have a lot of time for the rest of us, which is, you know, they're very limited on time, and so yeah, we appreciate it. They're just wonderful people, so thanks.
Awesome. High fives to them. Also high fives, I think, to Dougie for doing the accounts, sure. Because that's, you know, it's the grease that keeps it all rolling.
Well, I have bestowed the title of practice manager upon Dougie, and he has a award plaque that's his hard work that I presented to him at business launch party as world's best practice. So he has a lovely, it's a gorgeous glass and wood trophy / plaque. Yeah, that has the logo on it and his name, and yeah, world's best practice manager on it. So
fabulous. Yeah. Very well earned.
Exactly. Thank you. Yes, he has.